This is Anthony Iannarino, and you're listening to In the Arena. Step into the arena. How can you work in sales and not know who Gerhard Schwantner is? I've known about Gerhard for a long time. I've been a longtime reader of his flagship publication, Selling Power magazine, but I've never had the occasion to meet Gerhard. At the end of last year, Gerhard announced that I'd won Top Sales World's gold medal for best sales blog, and when he made that announcement, he said some really nice things about me. I saw him in my chat bar on Google+, and I chatted him to say thanks. And a few minutes later, we were on the telephone. A day or two later, we were shooting videos for his new web property for sales ops and enablement called Sales Ops Shop, and we were fast friends. So I've been referring to the time that we're in as the disruptive age for a long time, and people always recommend that you embrace change. But how do you do that when you publish a magazine and that business is dying right before your eyes? Listen to what Gerhard thinks, and more importantly, listen to what Gerhard believes. Hey, Gerhard, how are you?
I'm doing terrific. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, thanks for being here. I appreciate it. Let me go back and start you back in 1981. If my memory serves me, Selling Power started in 1981. What were you doing at the time, and what made you want to become a publisher and start a magazine about sales and selling?
Well, I wish I could tell you that this was a well-planned-out idea. It was not. It was more serendipity. I created an audiovisual training course to enhance my services to my clients. And I trained 5,000 salespeople in Europe, and I trained about 5,000 in the United States. And I wanted to create some residual income. So I created a course called The Languages of Selling that was designed to teach salespeople to use nonverbal communication techniques together with professional selling skills. And that was part of a course that I developed where I didn't have the audiovisual, so I created a two-coder carousel with sound-synchronized slide at the time, and I sold it through direct mail. And I made a little money, and I was at a crossroads where I needed to develop a strategy for my growing business. There are two avenues to pursue: either create another course and reduce the mailing cost that way, or reduce the mailing cost with the first course and increase the profit margin. So when I realized that the development of a new course was pretty expensive and risky, I decided to look at the other avenue, and we had a direct mail piece that had an outside envelope, a four-color brochure, a reply envelope, then a little order card that was color printed. So we really had a very classy, very successful mailing piece. And I asked my designer, can they reduce the cost? And he says, made an offhand remark saying, well, you may as well print on newsprint. That's the cheapest thing to print on. But I don't think it's going to work. And I said, wait a minute, let's examine that. I like to read the Wall Street Journal. I like the look and feel of that publication. Can we create maybe an 8-page newspaper tabloid, and we call it Personal Selling Power, and I would publish articles in that little publication, and then we would have a 2-page ad inside and a reply device printed on the back. And he says, well, I'd be happy to work with you. So I gave him articles that I had written, and I wrote every single article in this volume one, number one of Personal Selling Power at that time. And we sent out 25,000 copies to a mailing list I bought. And I was hoping that I would get enough money from that effort to test it against my color direct mail piece. And lo and behold, after about 6 weeks, I get more responses on that newspaper tablet that I've gotten with the color printed brochures. And my cost was cut in half. So I increased the profit margin. But then something really strange happened. I got phone calls from people. And I remember I got Liberty Mutual, I got 3M, I got Burroughs. I got a number of companies calling me and saying, can we buy more copies of that newspaper? And I thought, it's kind of funny. That's kind of odd. What are you going to do with it? And they said, well, we want to hand it out to our salespeople. And I said, great, how many do you want? And the first call was for 200. The next call was for 50. Somebody wanted 500. So within a very short period of time, I sold reprints of that newspaper tabloid to the tune of about 3,000 copies. And so with the next issue, with the next edition, volume one, number two, I put actually a price list in there and said, if you want extra copies, send me 65 cents. And so I did a test and sold 4,000 copies of that newspaper tabloid. And then with volume one, number three, I thought maybe we do another test and say, in 1981, we come out with six issues, set me $12, you get a one-year subscription. And it was a big gamble in my mind, and I thought it was worth the gamble. And I made sort of a commitment to myself. I said, if I get 500 subscribers or more, I will continue. If I get less, I will refund the money and say, thank you, that idea didn't work, here's your money back. And within, I would say, about 7 weeks of doing that mailing, I had 1,200 paid subscriptions. By the end of the year, I had 7,500. And then I discovered something else that was new to me, that you get renewals, which I had never thought of. So 80% of the people who subscribed for the first year, they renewed for the second year, and then I got new subscribers. And then it snowballed, and over time, we became the largest magazine in the world. So I made incremental improvement. The next step was to gloss the tabloid, and then we went to regular magazine format. We increased the circulation from 6 to 8 to 10. And pretty soon we had advertising revenues to a tune of about $8 million.
That's a great story. And now your circulation, I can't imagine, is what it once was. It has to be down just because of the industry. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely. The circulation is down to 25,000. But yet concurrently, we were betting on the internet and expanded our footprint online. And today we get over 330,000 individual visitors a month to look at Selling Power articles and to learn and study and watch videos. I have 500 video interviews with top sales leaders in the industry on the site, and a lot of people subscribe to that. We have an online newsletter for sales managers, and over 120,000 people subscribe to that.
This is the part that fascinates me about you personally, and I've gotten to know you over the past couple months, and I think we might be up to 500 videos soon, just you and I chatting like we do on weekends. But the psychology here, where you talk about this, and at the peak, you've got hundreds of thousands of subscribers, and now you say, not a big deal. I moved on. We moved to the internet. You're the only person, I think, maybe in publishing that feels this way. What is it about you that you're willing to take this in stride and not say, I built this giant thing, and it was beautiful, and it was wonderful, and now it's gone? How do you handle that psychologically?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I had the same conversation with the CEO of Fairfax Media. He's the CEO of an Australian newspaper chain that has over 200 newspapers. And he says, Google sucked the honey out of our business, and we need to rework our business. And every publisher I know thinks the same song, and they're singing the blues. And to me, problems are nothing but wake-up calls for creativity. And I thought, what is my real role here? I love selling. I'm very passionate about helping people grow and learn. And I'm a perpetual student, and I love new ideas, and I love learning. So I thought my role essentially boils down to this. I'm the broker of ideas between the solution providers and the problem owners. The solution providers are the people who have been incredibly successful and shared their secrets to success with me in the publication and did a lot of great cover stories, met a lot of amazing people like Michael Dell or Mark Benioff and Larry King or Ed McMahon from The Tonight Show. I mean, really unbelievably successful people, and Mary Kay Ash. So those are wonderful memories, but essentially I try to extract from their idea bank the best ideas that we printed in the magazine. And the problem owners have the same problems over and over. There are so many sales forces that are not well-trained, that don't have a good process, that don't have great technology. So in essence, I'm the broker of ideas, and that doesn't change whether I do it in print or in online. But we have built the conference, the Sales 2.0 conference, that now has over 2,000 attendees in 4 conferences a year, and one of them is in London, 3 in the United States. And we sit around and we talk about what can we do to enhance people, to advance processes, and to improve technology.
And so all you've seen, and I guess the way that you're framing this up, is that you're a broker of ideas and a publisher, and where you publish and how you publish has changed. But other than that, your role really hasn't changed. You still find people with ideas that you can share. You still publish those ideas. You've just moved the format.
Yeah, and I think there's one fundamental insight that people in publishing need to realize is that we have left what I call the linear world. The linear world is, sending an email or writing a book or publishing a magazine. That's all linear. There's one line following the other. We are now in the age of a multidimensional information world where we go online, where we see information in different channels online. So online, we can access a video channel and subscribe to that. We can subscribe to a blog. We can read blogs. We can look at websites. We can read white papers. We can follow tweets. We go on Facebook. We can connect on LinkedIn. So there's so many information channels available. So our way of accessing information is no longer linear. We've left the non-linear world. And that's why you and I have created that video channel where we talk and where we riff off video clips that we look at. So there are millions and millions of videos. And what I'm discovering is that everybody has become a publisher. Some are better than others. There are some people who develop really good content, and they're doing a great job. But that's not the future. The future is in creating a multitude of views that allow people to think about things in a different way. So you and I have discussed this, what the co-founder of LinkedIn has said. We need to arrive at a networked way of thinking. In other words, it's no longer one person that can achieve insights that people want. It takes a network of people to create a higher level of insight distributed to everybody in different channels that will improve the world. And that's how publishing needs to change. The thinking of publishers needs to change where they create a network of information that other people can build on and connect with. So I think that the future of publishing is network publishing.
I think what's interesting about you in your psychology, you have really embraced this whole thinking. It sounds to me, and I know probably at the height of Selling Power, you had a great amount of subscribers, a lot of things going on, great revenue, but you sound to me like you're really happy with this change. You've embraced this so much. You seem thrilled to be a part of it in this new way.
Yeah. And I can't explain this with one word. I am curious, and curiosity drives me. And I want to be in tune with what's going on outside. And I know a transition, any transition for anybody, that's so fundamental as being disrupted by Google. If you can't fight them, you join them. You learn from them. And adversity is nothing but the diamond dust that nature uses to polish its jewels. And I want to use that adversity, or I have used the adversity, to change fundamentally and try to become the new guru and the one that sees the future, because I'm feeling the future. I have the intuition of the future, and I think I know what is coming around the corner. And that's why people come to our conferences, because they want to know, and I want to learn. And I'm not somebody who wants to become a hero to other people who knows everything, because the old model of the hero is dead. We need networked nodes that can absorb the information that's out there and then redistribute that. So we need to become network creators, and then we can become net worth creators.
Tell me about the Selling Power Conference upcoming. What do you see as the biggest changes and trends that sales forces and salespeople are dealing with right now? What's on the horizon that you'll be talking about at your upcoming conference?
Well, that's a good question. The basic levers that sales managers need to deal with three: people, process, and technology. You need to give salespeople a mindset, a tool set, and a skill set in order to win. So 60% of their time needs to be spent on people. But then they need to look at processes. What is my lead generation process? What is my funnel management process? What is my quotation process or configuration process? What is my process for compensating salespeople? What tools can I use in order to align sales with marketing so that sales and marketing speak with one voice, so that the story that marketing crafts are being retold by salespeople in a format that's easy to access by the customer, that resonates with the customer? And there's so many things. And how do I integrate social media in the sales process? Because selling has fundamentally changed, because buyers have shifted and they've drifted away. And the trust and reputation is built by companies no longer through advertising one-way messages, but it is an expression of the quality of the conversations that companies have with their clients online. So we have entered a conversation economy, and those companies that are hiding in the foxholes and that are not embracing social media, they're suffering.
Secret agents.
Yeah, the secret agents. I know there are some companies where 50% of their leads come from LinkedIn. I know companies where they have a Twitter system where they interact with their customer, and they're very responsive. You know, if I were a buyer today, I would analyze the selling company quickly on the internet and see how many followers do they have on LinkedIn? How many followers do they have on, how many fans or likes do they have on Facebook? And how many followers do they have on Twitter? So I want to know whether the company I'm dealing with is well connected to the market. And the buying has shifted in another way, which is very interesting, that companies no longer buy a product. Companies buy relationships, and they buy connectedness. So on one hand, companies look at the salesperson and say, is this a worthy ambassador of the company? Do I want to deal with the ambassador? Does the ambassador speak my language, but also speak the company language? Can he or she transfer it for me? But on the same, at the same time, the buyer will look at, what is the social savviness of the organization? Are they savvy enough to satisfy my needs when the salesperson is not there? Do I have self-service? Can I go to their website? Can I chat with somebody else? And online relationships are more transactional, and they need to be channel neutral, that the companies need to communicate in every channel. But the relationship with the salesperson will never be transactional.
I agree with you. I often say that sales people are not being judged by the client by their ability to sell. They're being judged by their ability to create value, and our customers are looking at us more from the viewpoint of, can I add this person to my management team? Can they bring results? Can they do some thinking for me?
Exactly. And that, those are some of the thoughts and ideas that we discuss at the Sales 2.0 conference, where we have people who are thought leaders in their discipline, like with marketing leader Matt Hines. We have Jeff Hazlett, who is the former CMO of Kodak. And those are very dynamic speakers. We have great keynotes from, for example, there's a company that's growing very rapidly in the sales incentive compensation space. Chris Cabrera is the CEO of the company and the founder. And he has great insights on how you can align your compensation structure with your business objectives, where you can model compensation in a way that makes salespeople really reach a little higher and achieve more and create more profits for the company, but also at the same time, take more money home.
Let me switch gears on you here. I used to get the magazine. I've seen lots of covers. Tell me about the interview that you always wanted to do that you finally got. Who was that interview? What's the best interview you did for Selling Power, the one you're most proud of?
Well, there are many, and I have many favorites. I think that there are two types of interviews. One type of interview that where I sought out the person where I wanted to learn and where I needed to learn. I wanted to understand the world of business and finance better. I remember I interviewed a guy on Wall Street, Marty Shafiroff. He was a broker, very, very astute guy, and I spent an entire day with him, watching him and his team receive CEOs who came in and pitched the company so the brokers would sell their stock. So in one day, I heard five amazing presentations of very gifted, talented CEO, did the financial dog and pony show, and there was one CEO who was on his seventh trip to financial centers around the world. And it's amazing how that world works to me. And this guy had a team of super professional salespeople. And a lot of people today, they frown upon, financial salespeople. But that team, they earned their trust. They did their due diligence. They researched every client. And I was so impressed with them. Because they sold millions and millions of dollars worth of securities. I was very impressed with Mary Kay Ash. I interviewed her twice, and I went to Dallas, Texas, went to her office, and sitting right in the CEO's office and had a wonderful conversation with a wonderful human being that was really preoccupied with helping women win. And there's no better entrepreneur that I've ever met besides her. I cannot think of anybody who was such a visionary and created an international company that was hugely successful. I was very impressed with Marc Benioff when I first met him, the founder of Salesforce.com. We had dinner in Monterey, and he explained sort of his vision for his company. At the time, he had about 30 people working for him. And I remember I had about 30 people. So I thought, we are equals, and I want to listen to his dreams, and I want to listen to his ambition. And he says, Garrett, I want to create a $1 billion company in 10 years. And I had that, I heard that song before from other people, and I haven't known anybody who's ever achieved that. And I said, Mark, how many Mai Tais did you have? I lost count. And so sure enough, about 6 years later, he invited me to the New York Stock Exchange when he became public, the public company. And I was there with him and a few other close friends and rang the bell at the New York Stock Exchange. I thought it was a great moment. And, you know, we had a great cover story, and the company was hugely successful. And I recommend his book. It's really amazing, where he shares his secrets. And what is really funny is 3 years ago at Dreamforce, he had a cover of Fortune magazine outside the event, and he had a whole stack of his books to give away free to anybody who was there, who attended. And guess what? Everybody ignored print. Nobody took copies. I even took a little video. I couldn't believe it myself. And I thought, here's a free magazine. Here's a free book that you don't have to buy for $19.95 in the bookstore. All you need to do is go over there and pick it up. And nobody picked it up. And I'll never forget that moment. I thought that reminded me of the conversation I had with him about 7 or 8 years ago, where he says, God, print is dead. And I said, how do you know? And he says, well, everything is going online, and you better go online as well. And that was good advice.
It's been great advice for you. I wanted you to give me a story just about pure star power. Who was the one person that just the celebrity? I know you had many of those on your cover. Sports star?
George Foreman, probably. George Foreman was so funny, and it was so amazing. I've never seen a world champion, you know, and seeing, I mean, he had a great suit on, but I knew that if he would flex his biceps, I think his suit would crack. he weighed about 230 pounds at the time, and it was pure muscle. I think his body fat percentage was maybe 8 or 9%. It was incredible. At the same time, he was so gentle and so nice and so so street savvy and so smart and so determined. It was an incredible experience. And he also acknowledged that he has learned from many, many people that came before him, and he studied all the successes. So in essence, I was very impressed with him, and I learned a lot from him. Because success breeds success, and I almost feel that success rubs off.
I think it does. I think you're right. And Big George is a great example of that. In fact, I think he's made more money now from the Foreman Growth than he ever made from boxing.
Yeah. If you know how to grill, you can make money.
If you know how to market, you can. That's for sure.
That's right.
Let me ask you one final question. Sales Op Shop. Tell me about Sales Op Shop, what it is, what your goal is there, and what you want people to do.
Thank you for asking. I created the Sales Op Shop because I see a future for Sales Operations Manager. That's a new profession. The Sales Operations Manager is really the science nerd that helps the sales VP how to fix problems that they constantly have. So The huge trend, the mega trend here, is that selling has become more of a science through technology. And there are now over 2,000 sales applications on the market. And when I went to the last Dreamforce, I realized that there were about 400 vendors that exhibited there, and it looked like a technology flea market. And I felt somebody needs to organize that. So when we at our Sales 2.0 conference, and I ask people constantly, what does your technology footprint look like? What is your blueprint? And it's very hard to get, actually. So I said, why don't we design the Sales Op Shop? And we do two things. One is we show the most productive apps on the site, and people can shop it, and they can discover it, and they can see who is the CEO. They can see what they do on Facebook, on LinkedIn, on Twitter. They can discover why they should be interested in that app. But here's the kicker. They also can then click on a button and say, let's say you're interested in Marketo, in a marketing software. So you click on Marketo, and then you see that 142 companies are using Marketo right now. So then you can click on those people that are using that application and say, oh, here's Anthony. He's using Marketo. So why don't I connect with him and get the true story about the company, about the product, about the installation, about the integration, about the pitfalls, about the advantages and disadvantages of making that choice. So you have now, with over 700 members after 3 months on the sales hub shop, and about 98 of them are from companies of over $1 billion. So for another search function, which is interesting, if you want to connect with somebody who is only about, let's say, 50 salespeople, you can do that. Or if you choose a company $100 million, then you can do that. So you can connect with your peers in a pinpoint fashion. It's not about quantity networking. It's about quality networking. So you can quickly find the person that you want to network with, and they're only happy to collaborate with you.
And people can sign up at www.salesopshop.com. And how else can they reach you, Gerhard? Where else can they find you?
Sellingpower.com, or email me, gg@sellingpower.com. gg@sellingpower.com.
Thanks so much for the short email, gg@sellingpower.com, because your name has almost no vowels in it and no one can spell it. So,
well, I think we should trade and I should buy a vowel from your name.
I think that's a good idea. Thanks so much for your time. I always appreciate it.
It was an honor to speak with you.
Okay. Andrew. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
If you can make it out to San Francisco, April 8th and 9th, 2013, get out to Gerhard's Sales 2.0 conference. Go to sales20conf.com for more info. If you want to send me questions or comments, email me directly at anarino@gmail.com. Until then, you can find me at thesalesblog.com. And I'll see you next week in the arena.